So hello out there. It is another episode of Two Asian Dudes Talking. Today we have a fairly interesting topic.
We're gonna be talking about this whole humongous protest that's been happening in Hong Kong. It's such an issue within the Asian community, especially those who are living in Hong Kong, obviously. But it's actually affecting quite a few people, and a lot of us who are overseas, immigrants in other countries, are taking huge notice of this as well. So we thought we'd talk about it and kind of dissect it a little bit for our audience, assuming we have an audience.
Based on our view, of course, we might be biased a certain way, but certainly based on our experience and what we've seen.
Yeah, I think that the huge disclaimer is we both live in Los Angeles, right, in the US. So we don't have firsthand knowledge of everything that's going on there. And I know for myself, most of everything I'm hearing is really filtered through the news, which obviously tends to be a little bit more of bias, one way or the other. So, everything we're talking about here is strictly by all opinion based on what we've read and heard about. So keep that in mind while we're discussing this very, very sensitive topic.
So what is exactly happening in Hong Kong as we speak now?
Right. So if anyone has been following in the news at all, it's a huge protest. I mean, the number of protesters has been...
So what I've read is that there's 8 consecutive weekends of people going out to the street, demonstrating peacefully on the displease of how government handles certain
legislation. So background-wise, for our audience who's listening who don't have a strong background into what led up to this, I think everybody knows by now, Hong Kong used to be under British rule. It was basically, since the wars in the 1800s, was handed over to Britain for a lease of about 99 years, which actually ended in 1997.
That's correct. Okay.
So when that happened, there was a sort of compromise between the governments, between the British government, Hong Kong government, and China, in which the Hong Kong people were told that they would be left under what's a one country, two system rule, meaning it'll still have somewhat greater autonomy when conducting business and other political rules. Now, that was basically supposed to last for about 50 years until the year, 2047, I think, if you added 50 years or so. And this protest was actually sparked by something kind of almost minor that kind of was not something major that you would think would actually spark this. At least I didn't think.
Well, we don't think it's major, but certainly people in Hong Kong think that's pretty significant.
Right, right. Because basically what's happened
could be the last straw that sort of broke the camel's
back. Yeah, I think that's what it actually is that this was the last straw. Because throughout this entire, from 1997 all the way through the present, when the Chinese government had promised to let Hong Kong run their own government, there's been rules and regulations that's been pushed out that was almost a demonstration of the government going back on that promise. And I think this might have been the last straw that showed that they had no intention of actually allowing Hong Kong to be autonomous, to be completely independent of Chinese influence.
That's correct. I think back in the early 2000, the Chinese government has actually allowed, quote unquote, the people of Hong Kong to vote for the office and whoever the legislation council. However, this pool of candidates must be selected by the Chinese government.
Right.
So in
right.
a sense that you can vote for them, but you can only vote for the people that we support.
Right.
That's what the Chinese government has been telling the people in Hong Kong, and that's been still
that's still a huge issue that everybody's kind of upset over. Recently, there was a couple, a Hong Kong couple that was actually murdered in Taiwan.
Not the couple was not murdered. It was the boyfriend who murdered the girlfriend.
Oh, were they? Okay,
I misread. Yes. So what happened is they went on vacation. So it's Hong Kong residents. They went on vacation to Taiwan. The boyfriend or the husband, whatever the case is, the guy murdered the girl. Okay. He fled back to Hong Kong. However, there's no, and the Taiwanese police sort of caught up, figure out what's going on. There is no extradition treaty between Taiwan and Hong Kong.
Right.
Even though they know this guy is, the suspect is could be guilty, they can't really send this guy back to Taiwan. That is what triggered the bill.
Right, right. So this bill, this extradition bill, basically was supposed to have, since Hong Kong doesn't have a treaty with most of the surrounding countries, the bill, as far as I understood it, was supposed to allow a case-by-case basis where suspects can be transferred outside of Hong Kong for trial. Unfortunately, attached to this bill was basically an allowance for the suspects to be transferred to China for, you know, trial anytime they want, basically.
Correct.
So the fear now is then China has full control of any of the criminals. They could just simply point to an individual, say he's a criminal, and just take him without any actual due process whatsoever.
Right. This would open the door to political influence, political control, and therefore, democracy.
And the Chinese justice system isn't really known for innocent until proven guilty.
Really?
Most. If you, I think I read a statistic somewhere several years ago. I don't remember where it was from, but they say anybody who's charged in the Chinese court, 99% of them are convicted. Like just straight up conviction. You pretty much have no chance.
So it's pretty much the other way around. You're guilty until you're proven innocent.
Exactly. So this is, I think this, and then this this single kind of attachment to that whole fiasco was what brought on this. This protest, they want to get rid of this extradition law that would allow the Chinese government to have basically a backdoor to
extract individual they feel like it will be a threat to their regime.
Yeah. Right. So it's a huge protest. It's been going on for a month, almost a couple months now. A
couple months.
Yeah.
So initially, folks are, So my wife is from Hong Kong. Like, she actually have friends that actually participated in these protests.
Right.
There's one point in time, I think there was state calculators worth about 2 million people on the street. Now, for those of you who is listening, roughly there's a little under 8 million people population in Hong Kong. So that's, 2 million people on the street, that's 1 out of 4.
Yeah, that's just a huge percentage of people just
participating in that protest. What about those people just got lazy and just like, I support them, but I just don't feel like going out? Or those people, I have obligation to go to work. So when you factor in those numbers, I can imagine that number to be pretty big.
So it's basically almost
entire population.
The entire population.
Majority.
In support of repealing this this law that they're trying to submit. Now, the protests are still going on, mainly because they haven't really withdrawn the law yet.
I feel that's an excuse, because the I actually don't know what her role, her title is, but the governor of Hong Kong, she actually came out, the bill is dead. Now there's suspended, I guess that's the term, politically dead / suspended. She has not officially withdrawn the bill.
Right.
But I think that's just an excuse. I think the protest has somewhat escalated.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much evolved now. It's no longer about that one issue. It's now just, they're now basically pushing forward this request that Hong Kong be completely autonomous, be independent. From Chinese rule.
Right.
And that's what really, I think, the focus of the protest has
been. And I don't know if it's true, but what's on the news nowadays is really focused on the violent aspect of those protests. Like majority of the population were, folks would be willing to support the belief But when it comes to become violence, you see a lot of people withdraw from participating in those protests.
Yeah, and I think that this is the part where, you know, I have to put a footnote in about what we're talking about, because we're not there, so we don't see who's being violent, who's not. But from the news and some of the photos that are coming out, you know, there's majority of violence seems to be coming from the police side, at least from all the news stories I've seen. I don't know if it's true, but that's
so what source are you looking at? So I read the news just like Andrew, and maybe we are looking at the same story from a different lens. I feel like the violence comes from a lot of it are civilian driven.
Really? Now, that's interesting.
So the way that I see it is there's three group of people, right? You know, we're not talking about the innocent protester who does really want, you know, Hong Kong to be well. We're talking about a very, very selective group of, I would say, younger millennial who are angry, who has something in their system they need to get out, right? So they represents the sort of pro-democracy side. And then you have an older generation who are also civilian, who say, hey, don't rock the boat. You know, things been good, you know, we like China, pro-China. We could have this one country, two system going, you know, even though our system is not fully don't have a full democracy to it.
It's better than...
Better than nothing, right? Yeah. Better than what they have in mainland. So there's these two group of people, and then you have the police who's sort of stuck in the middle, right? Police wants to, you know, obviously mind you that these people are getting a paycheck. These people probably have family member on the other side or on both sides.
Right.
And, you know, they have family member, younger family member who supports it, and they have family member who's doesn't support the protest. But they are put in the middle where they need to restore order to a society, and that's their role, and that's what they've been tasked to do. And I commend these, you know, with the selective few police issue,
right.
Majority of them I think are there to protect the society. But what I've seen in the news, the violence is really driven by this young group of millennial who I believe their intent is good, but they should not escalate the violence the first escalation was the break-in into the legislation building and start tagging, graffitiing the entire building. That is a ridiculous no-no, dumbass, you know, what the heck are you doing, donkey type of move, right? What, you know, if you believe in what you did, you could just do it peacefully. There's no need to go and destroy property and upset, you know, wake up the giant, call it, right? And just like, and not only do you sort of alienate your other peaceful protester, you're just putting yourself out there as a target. Now, once this happens, you know, you have the older generation who does not want this, you know, who's kind of pro-China. It's like, we like what we have. Now, really, it's like, well, what the hell are you guys doing? And try to step up, that leads to an incident in the train station, which is, they're not right too. I think that older generation is all, call it what they are, thugs, right? They're gangsters. They could be paid for doing what they're doing, but they basically retaliated against these millennial and start beating them up at the train station with innocent bystanders. You have women, children, students getting hurt because of this, you know, these gangsters, these ducks are trying to keep these millennial on track, or try to put them back to their spot. But I think that's a dumb thing to do as being the mature adult in this argument, to use conflict to find a resolution, right? And all this time, you have these police sitting in the middle trying to tell everybody to calm down. From what I see, policemen are humans too, right? There's only so much you could take. And, you know, they, believe it or not, this is a riot and they need to defend themselves. So from what I see, from what I feel, I actually don't, there's, with the exception of a couple of cases in the recent protests, I don't see the, I actually feel sorry for the police. I don't see them at fault. I don't see them causing the violence.
The news articles I've been reading, you know, photos and what are always show, and I have to put a caveat on it, in that I have to admit, most of the news stations or you know, papers that I read tend to have a much more right
extreme side lean, right. Yeah, there's no middle ground.
There's no middle ground. So all the photos I've seen and all the uploads on social media or whatever, everything I've seen, always tend to show the police working hand in hand with that thug segment, right? Who most of these guys are claiming are actually not really pro anything. They're just part of the triad group who's been hired by the Chinese government to go out hand in hand with the police to knock some heads together or whatnot. So everything I've seen kind of pushed me to lean towards that it was a peaceful demonstration, and it wasn't until these thugs came and escalated, and then when everybody saw that, even though there was all this violence, the police were not doing anything to stop it, that pushed the students to then escalate as well.
Yeah, so this is sort of becomes a competition, right?
Right.
You could hurt me here, then let me hurt you there.
Right, exactly.
So I actually, let me take back my statement. I agree with that particular train station incident. I think there is coordination between someone in the police and the thug, but I don't want to use that incident as a blanket for the entire police force Hong Kong.
Yeah. Right? I mean, obviously, just like anywhere else, so certain police officers are great on just trying to do the job. Others are not so great.
Also, if you happen to be working in that area under that particular police station, if you are given an order to evacuate this place,
you have to follow the order,
right? So it really boils down to that top guys or who was running that station and say, hey, look, you know, whatever coordination they have with the thug, you know, it's on him, right?
Right.
You know, folks like the lower ranking officer, they're just following orders.
Yeah, yeah. Right? They're just following order, and you know, you have to, in order to try to keep the peace. You don't know what else is going on. If they say, hey, stop these guys from hitting some other guy, that's all you can do.
Right.
So anyway, so that's basically what's been happening. And I think, you know, to move this discussion forward, really, it's a couple of questions. Do you think, you know, it's going to result in anything? Do you think there's going to be an end result that's going to make either side happy?
Well, as we sit today, this is U.S. time, we're Friday, Hong Kong is Saturday morning. The latest I heard is that they're sitting in now the airport.
Right.
The intention is to stay there for the entire weekend. I feel the outcome is not going to be favorable. I feel like the worst is going to happen before it gets better. I feel like the Chinese government with their military strength will flex power. And now they'll flex power very shortly here. And at that point, being the young and rash millennial, that, you know, I would say if I'm at that age, I'll probably think that way too. Feel like this is truly a revolution. And I would feel like there'll be additional conflict, additional violence.
Right. I mean, I don't see this protest in itself accomplishing much, to be honest. Yeah, and I think you're right. There's going to be, you know, once the Chinese government, the actual Chinese government, steps in,
the military, you mean?
Yeah, the military. Yeah. When they step in, that's when you're going to see what may result from all this protest, right? Either the military steps in, they start just putting people down, and then you're scared enough where the whole thing just disappears,
right?
Or, strangely enough, if Yeah, they start putting people down, but it doesn't scare anyone away. In fact, if it does the opposite and actually gets more people on the street protesting,
right,
then maybe you have a chance, and then you get more involvement from, you know, other countries and support diplomatically. Then, yeah, maybe in a few more years, you actually do something. But I don't see that happening, honestly. I see the latter, though. Really?
And here's why, right? When you look at this, I mean, there's... When you look at... Like I say, my in-laws are there, and you know, we keep up some of the news. When you look at the underlying people, what's driving them, if normal people have a good standard of life, and they have good jobs, they have good prosperity, nobody in the white mind, and especially in Hong Kong people,
right,
would care about all this political stuff. I mean, all they care about is money. If there's a way to make money and get rich, they would do that before they would, you know, they would care about political.
And I think that you're absolutely right on that, and which is why I'm kind of pessimistic about this protest, because I haven't heard anything that says they're damaging enough of the economics of Hong Kong or China, you know. So that's where my pessimism is, you know. If you're right, if you damage it enough where everybody's having trouble making a living, yeah, you're going to draw in more people. But right, I haven't seen that yet.
We're not at that point yet, right?
Yeah, we're not.
The business community are well aware of the situation, but nobody really feels that we're at that point yet. Now, that might change when the military steps in. However, my point is, look, if you have a bunch of millennials who feels like they have a bright future, they wouldn't be doing this. If you force their hand, here's some of the situation they're dealing with, right? You have people that are graduating from college, this is in Hong Kong, graduating from college, making decent money, who can really afford to buy a house,
right,
who can really afford to rent something nice. You're looking at a professional who could be possibly living on a 50 square foot apartment, and that is considered as
very good.
Very good. Very good, right? Think about it. And there are people, if you're not a professional, you don't have a college degree, and you're not even making minimum wage, you're probably doing much better than that, but you'd be sleeping on a bed, right? And all your belongings are somewhere near the bed.
Right.
So that is the lifestyle that young people are trying to get themselves accustomed to it. And I'll share a little bit more. And because of these, mobility gap, there's actually folks in China who's coming down to Hong Kong,
right,
driving up the cost of living. One of the examples that happened maybe probably 5-6 years ago is that there was a period of time where Hong Kong people were so pissed off that pregnant women from China came down to Hong Kong, take up all the hospital spot to have the, Hong Kong has better healthcare,
yeah,
they want to have the delivery in Hong Kong. So basically what happened is that would drive out the local people. So if you in Hong Kong, you want to have family, you have a kid, but you know, you're not wealthy, well, guess what? Too bad, you don't really have a hospital bed. You're just gonna have to find something, and then hopefully that would work, and then somehow, be able to deliver a baby. And after that, the wealthy folks from China will come over to Hong Kong and buy up all the baby milk powder and all that, which suddenly leave us a shortage of supply for the local people. So I think, a combination of all this really sort of pushes the millennial to the edge. And I think it's different this time because there's no stability there. I don't see any stability, and there's no like at the tunnel where we're seeing, hey, look, these guys, we could pull to do this, we could have a good life. They don't see that. The only way out they see is, look, either I go to a different country, start over, or I fight for my freedom now, today. And I think because they have this mentality, That's why when you push the army in, you would actually
escalate further.
Right, and that's why I say that, you know, hey, look, I think it's the latter. And I see no way for these young people to really step down, step back, because if they step back, there's nothing to comfort them, right?
But even if they don't step back, though, I mean, Chinese military, that's...
They're done. I mean, they'll come in, they'll just like, they'll probably question.
I mean, yeah, I don't see anything that the students being able to do anything against that.
Well, that is the thing. I mean, I also think that one reason why the Chinese government haven't really flexed their military strength is really because of the global community, right? Everybody's right. Looking at this with social media, with press on the ground covering this incident. They are careful on how to portray themselves. I mean, this is a small piece. This is a small piece of a bigger picture, right? When you look at what China wants to accomplish.
Because you know, when this topic was actually brought up with my brothers during family dinner, my sister-in-law is from Taiwan. Mm-hmm. Her view of it is that if the Chinese military eventually steps in, she's actually afraid that once they're done with Hong Kong,
they're gonna
stare at that Taiwan. Because you know, even now, you know, the Chinese government has always seen Taiwan as just part of China.
Right.
So
it's just a matter of time them, you know, landing there and just like,
yeah,
change the flag.
And just flip the flag around. So everybody in that region is looking towards what's happening in Hong Kong now as an example of what will happen later on. Because, you know, that step, that turnaround towards Taiwan, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from before they look towards other countries in that region.
Yeah, and absolutely correct. And with so much tension in South Sea, right?
Yeah.
You know, those islands. I think China is smart in terms of playing this out strategically. I mean, they certainly don't want to go in there and just flex their muscle immediately. I think if they give it enough time, there's an argument to be made saying, hey, look, we've exercised patience, we've been accommodating, and look what's lead to. Therefore, we need to step in.
Right.
The longer this drags out, the more of a reason for them to step in.
Yeah.
We're protecting our country, we're protecting our economy, right? You know, we're protecting the tourists. Because now that they hit the airport, all of a sudden it was like we're protecting foreigners too. So, I don't think the protesters have the upper hand here at all.
No, I don't think so at all.
But I think the only thing they have, on their side is really the media and people are keeping an eye on this. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question with the outcome, I support what they do. Mm-hmm. I actually want, I want Hong Kong to be actually independent. Mm-hmm. Not just the one country, two system. I actually want them to be independent and they could leverage what they have in China. Because when you ask most people born in Hong Kong, and you know this, is they don't feel like they're Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand.
They feel offended when you ask, you're Chinese. No, I'm Hong Kongese. Whatever that means, right?
I can understand that because, I mean, technically, Hong Kong's been under British rule for, despite the 99-year lease, they've been under British rule for almost 100 and some odd years, 150 years,
right,
probably.
The culture,
yeah. So
the
everything's it's kind of like if you were living with in the U.S. for 150 years, and then you flip them back.
Yeah,
it's a hard adjustment.
Yeah, multiple generations, right?
Generations. Yeah. Living one way. I mean, the language is different. The mentality is different. Your likes and dislikes, and yeah, it's a hard switch. I can completely understand. I mean, even before the handover, I remember when we were growing up in Hong Kong, and I wasn't even part of the general population. Right. Before the 97 handover, everyone saw it as like a
doomsday.
Yeah, yeah. Like the songs were about it. There were books about it. There were TV shows about it. Everybody thought that was just going to be the end of the way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot just to kind of calm everybody down enough with this whole one country, two system bit.
Right.
So any kind of change, even if a small change, that makes it looks like the Chinese government is having more of a hand in how things run in Hong Kong, it's going to bring, it's going to upset people. So,
right.
Yeah.
So would you say that you support the, I guess there's a couple of things. There's supporting the protesters, supporting the idea and the spirit of the protest.
I support the spirit of the protest in that, like you, I'm 100% behind an independent Hong Kong. I think it's actually would be better for the for Hong Kong, and I think it actually would be better for China as well, because I would love, and this is going beyond what's going on there, but I would love for in the future an independent Hong Kong to have an influence in mainland China, so that they would actually head towards the same path. I mean, that's
if you say this and the Chinese government catches
it's first of all, it's delusional, because I actually don't expect that to happen.
Yeah.
But you know, in an ideal utopian mind of mine, I see that happening, and that would be great. So I absolutely support. But having said that, I highly doubt this protest would lead anything towards that. I highly doubt that Hong Kong would ever gain true democracy from China. I just don't see anything the students or anybody in Hong Kong that they can do which would make China back down. Because you're so separated, there's nothing you can do to really hurt the Chinese government in a way where they say, oh, we better give up on this and let Hong Kong do whatever it wants. I just don't see that happening.
You're right. There's I mean, you also need to look at sort of the political landscape, right? You know, Xi Jinping, now he's the quote-unquote like, quasi-king, right?
Right.
And he's a quasi-king forever, right?
Yeah.
He does not want to be seen as the person who lost Hong Kong.
Right.
Right, because if he went the extra length to gain the power that he has today, he's not going to relinquish it.
Yeah, he's not going to let it go.
Right.
And there's basically nothing you can do that will make him want
threaten
to let
him.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're only less than 3% of the GDP. Before it was just like, oh, okay, you could attract a lot of foreign investment to Hong Kong. Well, that's not the case.
That's not the case anymore.
Now it's China's Shanghai open and Beijing is just like right open. So there's no credible threat.
Yeah, there's no incentive and there's no threat for him to cut Hong Kong off and let them be independent. There's none.
I mean, the only thing that would affect him is, and probably would not be major, is just the negative impact it has in a global.
And I think in this current political climate, I don't see that happening, anyway. Because, I mean, the only two major countries that I think has any real push for China three major countries is Russia, UK, and US.
Yeah.
U.S. and U.K.'s current leaders don't give a damn.
Yeah, they have problem with their own rules.
Yeah, and they're turning more everything inward, so they're more focused on their own countries. Occasionally they'll send out a diplomat to say something, but they're not going to do anything about this. And then Russia, hey, there's no interest there. So I don't, if this protest had happened during some other decade, maybe you can count on some outside influence.
There might be more pressure.
Right.
There might be more pressure to the Chinese government to do more.
This current administration in these countries? Nah, I don't think so. Which is why I'm really much more pessimistic about this protest getting the people of Hong Kong what they actually want.
Right. But do you think the so the millennials, call them millennials, the pro-democracy group, do you think they will be backing down? Do you think they will realize what we realize and back down?
I think so. This reminds me of the other protest, the other large one, the umbrella protest back in the, what was it, 2014, like 4 or 5 years ago?
Yep,
2014. That was pretty big at the time. And it was a lot of people protesting, and it was pretty much the same ideals that they were going for, but that fizzled, right? Mm-hmm. That fizzled. At the end of it, everybody just kind of disappeared and it went away. And now this is bigger, this is longer, and this is going to be, I think they have a target that they're looking for and you know, something that they can fight with. But I think eventually it'll fizzle as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it will if it's peaceful, like last time. The majority of it last time was kind of peaceful, except there's probably some police brutality incident.
Right.
I think this time around, I think the dynamic is a little bit different with actually civilian against civilian. Chinese, like, in my view, Chinese like to this sort of safe face thing, right?
Right.
Now you start hurting me, I gotta start hurting you back. And I think this sort of taking revenge thing will actually prolong this protest, and actually would like the anger in a millennial, and actually, you know, basically push them to the edge and say, we're not going back, we're gonna just go all the way, wherever it takes us. You know, I feel like that's the mentality right now. And again, this is maybe, again, we're sitting here in Los Angeles, you know, maybe people were just sitting down, you know, having tea and just have calm, but from what I hear in the media and some of the YouTube that I found, I feel like these youngsters, like, look, they're putting themselves out there, man. They're going into places, you know, protesting, doing vandalism with all their face showing, right? So right. They are exposed. They got, you know, nothing to hide. And at the same time, if they say, if I go back to my previous life, which is to live in a tiny little bed with all my belongings, you know, making barely the minimum, work, you know, 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, six and a half days a week. No, F that, right? I'll just, you know, be the hero and fight for democracy. I think that's their mentality right now. Whether that thinking is right or wrong, that's a different debate, but I don't think that's the right approach. But I think that's their thinking right now, and I think because of that, I think it makes a dangerous formula to create a
better situation. I still think that, I think you're right. That is the mentality, but I don't know how long that mentality will carry them. I think if China literally just sit back and don't intervene, eventually it'll fizzle out. If, like you said, they actually bring the military in, that's a whole other story. When you start bringing in the military and start cracking heads, that's a whole different way.
They are eager though, right? Have you seen that video?
I can't tell, right? But yeah. I'm not there, so I don't really know for sure. But I think that's more propaganda to try to frighten a few people to you know, back off a bit. But I don't see them actually sending people in anytime soon, because that's just going to escalate. It will absolutely escalate and give, these younger kids, it'll fuel them up to think, yes, we are doing the right thing. They're now sending a military. We have somebody. We now have some target to fight against, right?
Create a common enemy.
Yeah. Versus now, if you just don't send anybody in and let them kind of, you know, argue back and forth with themselves, eventually it'll kind of slowly die out. So I think China should be, you know, more of a hands-off, at least in the near future, more of a hands-off approach. But that's just my two cents sitting here comfortably in Los Angeles while this is going on.
Right, it's certainly up to debate. Well, what about, how would you feel about, you know, let's say you sit at, you know, you mentioned earlier where U.S. and U.K. their side, you know, have their own issue to worry about. But do you think that, you know, if you're U.K. and U.S. and you, let's say you have, you know, let's say you're influential, and would you intervene, right? Would you provide support for these pro-democracy demonstrators? Would you, you know, just issue a statement or put pressure on China?
I mean, if I was, again, I don't think either leadership within the, you know, UK or US is going to do any of this, but if I were them, yeah, I would actually, you know, send out statements, which they already have sent out statements in support of the protesters, but Yeah,
would you do more than that? Like,
I would actually.
There's media reporting, true or not, that there's basically intelligence on the ground, foreign intelligence on the ground supporting the demonstrator.
I don't know how true that is, but I've read that maybe it was the UK who cut off sales supplies of tear gas or other weapons to HK. So they're doing something, but nothing dramatic. But if I were them, yeah, I would, because I think an independent Hong Kong can only help especially the British government. I think that independent Hong Kong can only help the British government if there's no downside. An independent Hong Kong would be good for the US and UK who wants to have a close by kind of inroad towards influence of mainland China.
So you're thinking on behalf of Western nation.
Yeah.
It certainly would not, from that perspective, it certainly would not be good for China.
It definitely wouldn't be good for China. I mean, if I was in the room of Chinese leadership, yeah, there's no way I would want that or allow that.
Right.
But if I was on the Western side, yeah, I would want that. That's a close, open ally, right spot next to, somebody who you want to defend from all the time. So yeah, I would welcome that.
I have the opposite view. I think I wouldn't want to intervene because, look, I want a pro democracy and independent Hong Kong for different reason. Not because I think what you just said is just. It helps the democracy countries, help protect the pro-democracy ideology. But at the end of the day, what independent means to me is just, you do what you want to do, right? You create your own faith. I certainly would put out a statement supporting them, but I don't think I would go beyond that. I think, people in Hong Kong choose this path to fight for democracy. Let them duke it out, even though there's no chance of them winning. But I would not, I would not put my own country's resource I would assist, depending on what level you need to do, right?
Well, you can't do too much.
Right, you're not gonna, certainly no military or anything, right? It's just more like, even underground, so some of the stuff in the background, I don't know how much I would want to do that. If I have to control the situation, I would just let it run its course.
Yeah, I'm viewing it from who would benefit more. In a truly independent Hong Kong, I think would benefit the West more than it would benefit China, and I think that's why there would be a mentality to support them. Right, or to, give them a nudge or whatever. But yeah, I don't think any country in the world would actually, pledge their actual military resources to help, make an independent Hong Kong. That's just.
Well, I mean, if that ever happens, that's war, right?
Yeah. That's not. Yeah. I don't think that will ever happen.
That's China. That's,
yeah, exactly.
Like it or not, people in Hong Kong might not like it, but that's. Still part of China right now,
exactly.
As it stands today.
So there's no chance of that happening because what you lose would be much more than what you could possibly gain from that. So,
fair enough. So I think this is a interesting time, not just in Hong Kong. I think this sort of illustrate, I feel like we're in a very turmoil. Global environment.
Every time I close my eyes, I keep thinking of the word tipping point.
Right.
We're kind of balanced on this edge of all these things going on in most of the countries in the world. Right. You have these riots in South America, Venezuela, Brazil, and then you have UK with this Brexit thing, kind of. Mm-hmm. Was it bubbling things up, and then you have France with their riots and everything that's going on in the Middle East, and you have this thing in HK, and then you have everything that's going on in the US. My God.
Yeah, if you look at all, maybe with the exception of certain continent like Australia.
Even Australia, I'm hearing all sorts of things, you know, internally about. Anyway, I don't want to talk about what
right. Australia has. Good point. I mean, yes, you look around at not only in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is just close to us. We notice it more, but there's every pocket in the world. There's these little conflict. I mean, not big, but when you sort of add everything up together,
it seems huge.
It seems like we're in a pretty unstable time.
Yeah. But I always wonder if that's just because we're getting older and starting noticing these issues in every country, or have they always? Because there's always been big problems throughout the world. I mean, you know, when our parents were growing up, there was the Cultural Revolution, there was the Iran-Contra, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis. There's all sorts of stuff that's been going on, you know, nonstop. But maybe we've just never been paying attention to it. Now that we're older, we see these things in the news like every other day.
And that could be the case.
But it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like it. It feels like that we're actually, all the countries are marching towards a really bad, bad scenario.
Right. I mean, I would like to say there is a point in time where there is generally is pretty calm, right? I mean, in this, 80s, 90s?
But that's just it, though. The 80s, 90s had, you know, the 80s had the Iran-Contra bit, and the 90s had the Iran-Iraq wars.
That's right.
I mean, there was something going on every decade in most countries, really. So. Mm-hmm. There was always things going on. We just never, I don't know, paid that much attention, maybe, or it didn't worry us because we were younger then. I don't know.
All right. Well, that certainly could be the case. And whatever that case is, you know, it's just, I think we want to share with our listeners today, you know, our view on what's happening in Hong Kong. Certainly, the story is not over yet because
it's far from over.
We're still in the midst of it. Yeah, whoever's listening out there, if you have certain view, we would love to hear from you, because I think to us, being an Asian community, being two Asian dudes talking, this certainly sort of hits the heart of, you know, our community, and you know, our Chinese community being Asians. This is a very, very big topic.
Yeah,
so
it's a big topic.
Certainly like to hear from you.
Yeah, and especially from those who are actually in Hong Kong or on the ground level, because, you know, we're getting everything secondhand, third hand most of the time. So maybe the truth is actually a little bit different than what we think.
Maybe we'll hear more of both sides of the story.
Yeah. Until next time.
Thank you for joining us.
Take care.
Bye.